I would imagine, you know, given some of the other stuff that has gone on, and we'll get into that with you. You're eager to get underway tonight, looking forward to the game against the Nigerians.
Yeah, it's an early first game for us. We've had a couple of days of practices, but the team has looked pretty darn good in practice, and Nick and his coaching staff have seemed to have got a lot of information into them and in terms of how we're going to play both offensively and defensively. So, you know, obviously an early showing, so they won't be at peak form, but we're looking forward to showing our fans here in Toronto what the national team looks like.
Yeah, and before we turn the page to the upcoming tournament and this team, fortunately, the conversation in this country often has been who isn't playing and not who is. I wrote an article for Sportsnet.ca this morning that I feel a lot of the culpability in this situation is at the feet of FIBA and the timing of the tournament. Am I missing something? Is there something that FIBA could have done to make this a more convenient process for NBA players?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's always different times in the NBA calendar. If you're talking about NBA players, you know, if it's too soon in the summer, then a lot of contracts won't be signed. You know, all the free agency happens in mostly in early July. So a lot of players will be waiting for contracts. It's going to be one of the issues that we'll face next year in the Olympics, because with the Olympics being in July, then, you know, there may be some of our players won't have their contracts done in time for that. So you know, those are the issues. But it's, you know, I do think it's a fair question to ask in terms of evaluating the whole international competition structure and how it works. This time around, to qualify for the World Cup, we had to have, I think we played 12 games. We did very well. We were 10-2. We won our pool. The U.S. was 10-2 in their pool. So, but it was very costly for us to qualify for this tournament, because we were flying people, you know, during their European seasons from Russia and from Europe and from all over the place to come and play for Canada. You know, these guys showed, you know, great commitment to fly that long. So one time we had a game in Montreal or Laval, and then the next day they had to fly down to southern Chile. And some guys flew 24 hours literally to get to Montreal, and then another 24 hours or more to get down to Chile. So it's, you know, I think it needs to be looked at, not only for the health and well-being of the players, but also in terms of, you know, what's a reasonable commitment you can ask for professional players, whether they're NBA or European or elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, and fiscally, that's very difficult for the federations, obviously, to continue to fly players all over the world rather than qualify through the continental tournaments like FIBA Americas and Eurobasket. Canada basketball gets the blame for this often, even though you're just literally dealing with the cards that you've been dealt. When did you get a sense that this year there were going to be so many absences?
Well, recently. We had, unfortunately, a bunch of injuries. Jamal Murray and Dylan Brooks both got hurt in the last week or so. RJ, we knew there was an issue. RJ Barrett, we knew there was an issue with his calf, and the Knicks were very concerned about it. You know, some players we knew early on that weren't going to be able to play. But other people, you know, they struggle with their decision, because I think it's, you know, it's a big decision for them. You know, they want to play, but, you know, they have other competing interests as well. And so, you again, each player, it's his own personal decision. We respect their decisions, and we appreciate their consideration. And, you know, we just have to keep plugging along. But we're so happy with the guys that are here. I think our European pros, when we assemble all the salaries for them to get the insurance on their contracts, you know, this is by far the most highly paid group of European players we've ever had. And I think that's an excellent sign of the quality of them, because, you know, they don't get paid to not play well over in Europe either. So we have some excellent players, and I'm going to love to see how this team competes and comes together.
With Glenn Grunwald, the president and CEO of Canada Basketball, and to the extent that you can, take us behind the curtain, Glenn. And I know that you've said it, Rowan Barrett has said it, we respect the decisions of all involved, and I trust that you do. I believe it when you say that. but I can't imagine that somebody picks up the phone or texts you and says, hey, I'm not coming, and you respond with, okay, chat later. Like, what is a conversation like with a player or an agent or whomever is involved representing that player in terms of not trying to twist the arm necessarily, but have that chat play out such that you can be at peace with the player's decision? Do you try to influence at all, or do you simply accept what is?
Well, no, we present the case. You know, I think these guys are all smart guys, and they've been around. They've been, most of them have been involved in our program, and they know how well we do things and how well they're treated and how good the coaching is and what a great experience it can be. But, you know, some people maybe have not been involved as much, and they need a little bit more education. So, again, these are tough decisions that these players are making, and it's not like they don't want to do it. It's just that they have, you know, other things that they have to think about and contemplate when they make their decision.
The interesting part of this conversation to me is, as a country, we need to not just talk about the players. We need to talk about how much we care about the sport as a country. And everyone loves to get behind the Raptors, but at times we haven't got behind our national program. There's a game tonight at Mattamy. Tickets are still available. People can go online and get them. Do we need to support our national teams more, not just in competition, but in the endeavor of getting to competition?
Well, certainly. You know, obviously, we could always use more support. But I think we do get a great support from a lot of our key long-term partners. You know, first and foremost, really has been, you know, the Raptors themselves. You know, they have a couple people on our board of directors. They're a sponsor of ours. They've shown great commitment from Larry Tannenbaum to Masai to the management team there, and have been longtime supporters from when I was around with the Raptors. So they you know, I can't ask for much more from them. They've been great partners. We've had, you know, Bell has been a longtime partner of us, Toyota. We have local people like Dreammaker, who's doing a lot of work in the real estate development investment area. I'm sure I'm going to miss somebody now, but yeah, we've got, but we could always use more. And the sponsorship market in the sports world in Canada is saturated, and there's a lot of the big money is sucked up by the professional teams, leaves it difficult. So I know David Shoemaker, who heads up the COC now, the recent appointment, you know, his focus is on making sure that all the NSOs, the national sports organizations, are getting the proper funding. For example, Sport Canada has not increased their reference level funding now in a dozen years, and that makes it difficult. The way Sport Canada views supporting sports is by the number of medals. So team sports are at a tremendous disadvantage, and they've tried to address that, but it's still more difficult for us to justify winning one medal when another sport could win 20 or 30. You know, if they run the board. So, you know, these are all the difficulties we face. But again, we're in great shape because the sport is so popular. So many people enjoy watching it and playing it. And so it's our job just to keep moving it forward. And I think we are. And I think basketball, along with a lot of other sports in this country, are in a great position to do well.
Yeah, disappointing to hear that Sport Canada, despite the fact that sport was invented by a Canadian and has more pro players than any country other than the United States, wouldn't increase the level of investment in over a decade. And that's why I think, and you talked about the saturated market, why the hope was this summer with some success and piggybacking off of the excitement around the sport, thanks to the Raptors championship, it would start a legacy for the national team moving in to the Olympics. How important is this upcoming tournament and qualification in terms of continuing that snowball in the right direction?
Well, it's important. You know, funding is determined on who's likely to medal. So, you know, if we qualify for the Olympics, both our men and our women have to qualify over the next few months here. Then we'll get additional funding for that and more interest, you know, because we all know that in North America, that the Olympics is the number one international sporting event in the world and what everything is focused upon. So the fact that we qualify and everyone knows we're going to be playing in Tokyo can only help our profile and help the support we'll receive. And and get more people excited about looking forward to us competing in Tokyo when it rolls around in 2020.
Glenn Grunwald is the president and CEO of Canada Basketball, and he's with us on Sportsnet today, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So we'll pivot here, Glenn. Were you in, where were you when the Raptors won the championship? And tell me what was going through your mind as the buzzer went and the Raps were bringing the Larry O'Brien trophy north of the border.
Well, first of all, I was in game five. I was in the stadium in the NBA Canada suite, you know, like everyone else, expecting we were going to win that game and win it at home. So that was, you know, but we went out to Golden State there, and I was just home watching. You know, I was just at home watching the game by myself and cheering them on. And, you know, when it was over, like, it was like still sort of unbelievable. Did this really happen? You know, did this group of people come together, played so well, take advantage of all the opportunities they were given, and really to watch the reaction of the fans, you know, over the weeks leading up to it, and then, you know, culminating in that parade on a few days later. It's sort of mind-boggling to see it all actually happen, and then you couldn't have asked for a better reaction from the country and all the people here.
For you, it must have been like seeing this child you saw from the embryonic stages grow up and graduate. You were around when it was a big deal that the Raptors got a Christmas Day game with Vince Carter, and now you're around when there's media from all over the world covering the Raptors in the finals. What were your first thoughts on just how far the team has come, you know, in front of your eyes?
Well, it's something you hope for, and that's your goal when you start out, and you realize when you have an expansion agreement that really handcuffed the franchise and how difficult it's going to be, and then overcoming you know, some of the problems in playing and developing a franchise in a new country. But you know, almost as exciting about that is to see the profile and reputation of Toronto itself grow so dramatically. It's like one of the best cities in North America if you pull anybody in the NBA. So that's also pretty exciting about it. And then see it actually, the NBA actually deliver a championship to Toronto and Canada really is just great, because there's so many people that have been around since, you know, 95. And even before that, that's the thing. Like when I came here in 94, I realized pretty early on that there was a lot of great grassroots basketball and great people involved. And sort of tap into that and to build on their work and sort of be the catalyst for the growth of the sport even more. It's just, I'm glad I was a small part of it, but it's awesome to see it where it's standing right now. And I think we have even a brighter future ahead of us.
Glenn, I mentioned Vince Carter and his era here being one of the historical points of the franchise, so much so he has a documentary, The Carter Effect. Vince Carter is still in the league, and he's playing another year. He's older than Trae Young's father. This will be his final year in the NBA, unless he surprises us and comes back once more. For you, what is his legacy?
Well, he was, you know, our greatest player. You know, maybe until Kawhi got here, but he not only electrified Canada and Toronto, but he also, you know, gave the exposure. He broke through that border, even on television, where, you know, the networks in the U.S. don't really care about, you know, ratings in Toronto or elsewhere in the world. They only care about what's going on in the U.S. But we were on more than anyone else when he was playing, and the exposure he gave and the way he represented our country with his flair and his excitement and his pizzazz. And then, you know, you see the movie The Carter Effect, and he also had a great impact here in terms of the culture developing in Canada. And then his role model for all these other young Canadian players that are now in the NBA, you know, leaves a great legacy in that regard as well. So I'm happy for Vince that he got to play another year. I'm in a way surprised, because, you know, when I was around, he was struggling with a lot of injuries, but he figured out how to take care of his body, and he's still going strong and still dunking. So I think it's a wonderful thing, and I'm happy that he's got his record 22nd season coming up.
Glenn, I know in your post-Raptor days, you did go and work for the Knicks, but you've also been the athletic director at McMaster University. You're now the president of Canada Basketball. You've chosen this city and this country to be your home long after your time of employment with the Toronto Raptors. Why
and
did
before
you?
Before Trump was elected, by the way, too.
Yes,
by the
absolutely. Although that seems to be having an effect on others' decisions, and we welcome anyone who wishes to run away from that. But what? Okay. Why was it important to you? What factored into your decision to want to stay in Toronto, the GTA, post Raptors, for the most part?
Well, you know, I love it here. I have a lot of friends and there that, we had a cottage here. So my wife is from here. So it made a lot of sense. As we all know, it's a great place to live. You know, it's got its issues like any other city and region, but, we were just happy to be able to come back here. And I managed to get a job at McMaster University, which is a great university, and a role that I was always interested in doing as an athletic director to help other young student athletes reach their potential and see their dreams come true. So it was just sort of worked out for me there, and I'm very, very happy I had the opportunity to come back here and hopefully contribute to some things and some people's lives.
And you still have a relationship with the NBA, and you have ties and relationship with the Memphis Grizzlies, which are quickly becoming, you know, the Raptors North, Canada's favorite team in the United States. What can we expect from the rebuilding of the Grizzlies moving forward?
Yes, I do a little consulting for the Grizzlies, but Zach Kleiman is the new GM down there, and he's done an awesome job. He's a really bright young man, and he's got a great future ahead of him, and I think he had a tremendous summer. So obviously they're in the sort of rebuilding mode, but I think the table is set for hopefully a successful and fairly quick rebuild. I mean, Ja Morant was the number two pick in the draft selected by Memphis, a great opportunity. And they've got Jaren Jackson Jr., who's a very talented big. So, you know, I think there's an opportunity for Memphis to get back into the playoffs in the next few years and build on a sustainable level. And I'm, you know, very happy to be a small part of that. But like I said, Zach has been very impressive in his early days as the general manager.